I hate to tell you this, but it turns out that traditional bed sheets can harbor more bacteria than a toilet seat. I know, very disgusting. Not only is it extremely gross, but it also leads to acne, allergies, and stuffy noses. Miracle Made offers a whole line of self-cleaning, antibacterial bedding, such as sheets, pillowcases, and comforters that prevent up to 99.7% of bacteria growth and require up to 3 times less laundry. If you get hot at night, you'll appreciate Miracle Made's self-cooling properties, which makes use of silver-infused fabrics inspired by NASA. If it's good enough for the astronauts, it's good enough for me. They are thermoregulating and designed to keep you at the perfect temperature all night long. It makes a huge difference in getting better sleep every night. If you hate sleeping in bacteria, which I'm sure you do, or you're looking to get rid of your worn and uncomfortable bedding, you should check out Miracle Made. You'll feel like you're tucked into a luxurious hotel fancy bedding situation, but it'll be a lower cost than some of those other brands. Go to trymiracle.com/thestacks to try Miracle Made sheets for you or a lucky loved one. Order today and save over 40%. Plus, if you use our promo code THESTACKS at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. Miracle is so confident in their product that it's backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. If you aren't 100% satisfied, you will get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiraclemade.com/thestacks and use the code THESTACKS to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/thestacks to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode. Welcome to The Stacks, a podcast about books and the people who read them. I'm your host, Tracy Thomas, and our guest today is Jill Louise Busby, the author of Unfollow Me, Essays on Complicity. Jill is a writer and filmmaker and is known as Jill is Black from her former Instagram account of that same name. We talk today about our worth in relationship to audience, how she named the book, and impact versus intention. The Sex Book Club pick for September is Blood in the Water by Heather Ann Thompson. We'll be discussing the book on the show on Wednesday, September 29th with Derica Purnell. If you love the podcast and want more of it, check out the Stacks Pack on Patreon. You support the show with a monthly contribution, and in exchange, you earn perks like exclusive bonus episodes, discounts on merch, virtual book club meetups, and a lot more. If you're interested in joining and being the recipient of my eternal gratitude, head to patreon.com/thestacks. I want to give a special shout out to some of the newest members of the Stacks Pack. Stasia Penn, Bethany Brady, Eliza VDB, Amy, Chrissy, Hanif Abdurraqib, Casey J. Gamble, Christine Platt, Kristen, and Stephanie Livingston. Thank you all so much. And now it's time for my conversation with Jill Louise Busby. All right, everybody, I'm very excited today. I am here with the author of Unfollow Me, Essays on Complicity, Jill Louise Busby, aka Jill is Black. For those of you who are internet people, spoiler alert, Jill is Black. Jill, welcome to the Stacks.
God, you told everybody right away. Thank you.
You know, I just wanted to make sure people knew before we got into it. It just feels really important.
It's good to be clear, I think. Yes. I'm so happy to be here.
So we're recording this right before your book comes out. We're still in August. Your book is out September 7th. I'm like going backwards.
It's been a weird year.
It's been a terrible year. But I'm really excited that you're here. I picked up your book sort of like they sent it to me. I picked it up being like, I really am interested in this. I'm really excited. And I'm so glad that I did. I just loved your tone and your energy. And we'll get into all of that. But before we do, I ask everyone to do this. And it sort of simplifies a lot of work into 30 seconds. But in about 30 seconds, can you just tell me about the book?
Yeah. It's a book about when we are insiders, when we are outsiders, when we know we are in each place, that gray area in between. It's about the internet. It's about identity. It's about complicity. It's about the cost of our participation in the things that we critique and how far we can really go before we become what we fear.
Yeah.
I think I would sum it up like that.
I think that's good. That last bit is the part of the book that just really fucking like hammered me in the heart. And I definitely want to spend time talking about that, about sort of like complicity and how we end up profiting from or like gaining from the things that we critique and like the things that we critique negatively, you know, because you can be critical of things that you love, but there is that distinction of like, and in your case, a lot of it has to do with like race, because you were making these videos and posts and things online that were like, dear white people, stop doing this shit. And then at a certain point, like your audience becomes these white people. I mean, and you talk about this a lot in the book, so I don't want to give everything away, but like as a human, when did you realize that that was happening, and how did you sort of respond over time? Because I imagine at first it felt different than maybe a year later or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I think because I had done like DEI work for nonprofits for a long time, that always existed for me, the idea of like, what am I doing? Who's calling me, and what am I supposed to say so that this is considered a good job? Right. Who gets to decide what that looks like? And so I had been toying with that, but not a lot, to be honest. you know, a little bit, but you got bills. So you can only play so much because you got to pay your bills. And so I think what happened was after I went viral, I had this like image of myself that really existed outside of me that I had to look at. And it was like all of my ego and all of my rage and all of it, and a lot of it being valid. But suddenly it was like outside of me and existed for other people. And so I had to critique it as if it was something else, something that it was, which was outside of me. So it got harder every year, because at first it was awesome. Right. So you're like, this is great. They're in your inbox. They're like, hey, we'd like you to do this thing. You're like, yes. And then, of course, you know, I'm getting a lot of praise from Black people. And that feels good, because all of a sudden it's like, oh, yes, say it, speak it, we love it. And you're like, okay, okay, okay. And then there are the people in your comments like, are you happy doing this? You know, and you got to ignore them. You got to call them trolls, because you're not about to change. So what are you going to do? I'm like blocked, you know. So I think it was when I, too, was like, would I follow this person? And what am I getting from this, that it really started? And of course, being in the rooms with other people and being like, oh, where am I now? And who's here with me?
Right.
And sometimes it was great, and sometimes it wasn't.
And then what did you do? Like, how did you, because you, I mean, you shifted. Jill is Black. It's no longer your handle, right? You changed your handle. You've like become, you've like had this metamorphosis of sorts away from that. But like, how did you decide, like, you know what, I'm going to put Jill the human first over Jill the viral personality? Like, I don't know. I don't know what the question is, but I know that there's a question. Do you get what I'm getting at?
Okay. Yeah, I get it. Honestly, at first I just ran from it because I also had a real life. Right. You know, like there's the real life off of the internet, and it's happening quickly. And, you know, my mom keeps like hinting, like, you don't seem happy. Like, you just don't seem happy when you're talking about the internet. I'm like, okay, okay. And, you know, over time, my real life just overtook it, where I had to look at, was it what I really wanted to be doing? Or did I feel like I had to do it because it came with the biggest, like, amount of ego for me? You know, like, did I believe the stuff, or was I just trying to be good at saying it? And whether the answer became yes at the end of it or not, I still had to ask. And then I'm like, why don't you ask any questions when you're talking to these people? Why don't you encourage other people to ask questions? You're doing it offline. So my offline and my online just stopped meeting up because in the beginning, it did meet up.
Right.
And then slowly you get more experiences, you learn more, things change, and it's like, oh, I'm not being authentic. And it's the internet, so when am I ever being authentic? But I'm not like matching up with myself in a way that feels really uncomfortable.
Yeah. I think what resonated for me with your book, and I think that in some ways my life is similar to yours in the sense that, like, I had this podcast and I was talking about books. And then last summer, people discovered Black people, right? And they decided that like my voice was all of a sudden important or like interesting. Mm-hmm. And then there came a level of new followers, new success. And I felt like, you know what? I've been doing this since before. Like, I had Dr. Ibram Kendi on the podcast in 2019. Like, I was a fan of his book. You know, like, I was doing, you know, quote unquote, the work or whatever beforehand. Right. And like, I'm Black also, spoiler. So like, you know, some of it, some of it was just my experience. But then at a certain point, I was like, wait a second. Who is my audience? Like, who am I talking to? I talk to my guest and I talk into this void, and then it goes out into the world, and like, who's listening and who's hearing? And I think that for me, and I wonder if this is the same for you, there's a sense of fear of all of a sudden there's like, people are listening now, or people are interested in what I have to say, and I don't want to say the wrong thing, even though in my private life, I might be saying something different. Or like, when I'm reading these books or I'm thinking about things, I'm all of a sudden getting worried about like, am I going to offend someone and all of this? And I felt like what was great about your book is like, you sort of said, yeah, I went through all those things and I decided that being honest about what was going on and saying like, fuck it, if you don't like me, unfollow me type vibe, like that was really empowering for me to read. And I went to a lot of my other friends in the book space who had a similar experience where like they got an influx of followers after the murder of a Black person. And we were all, you know, in the group chat being like, this sucks. How do I feel excited about the work that I've been doing and also not feel like a terrible person for getting HelloFresh food meal kit advertisement on my podcast, right? Like, it helps me pay the bills. I have to pay the bills. This is my job. But also, like, I know that this is because white people decided that I was valuable to them to quote unquote learn or whatever, you know? Right. And so I feel like your book was really helpful for me to think through that stuff, because you were sort of the wave of interest in Black people before last summer, right? Like, yours was like more closely tied to like around Ferguson, right? It's just like, it's just such an interesting thing.
Yeah, I like that we're tracking the years based on this, because there's nothing traumatic about that.
Right. It's all so traumatic. There's like no way to even talk about it without feeling like this is other people's real life nightmares.
It just is. And I think the way to talk about it is to talk about it. Because what was frustrating to me, now keeping in mind that I started this during that, but I get this book started right at the beginning. I want to say it was before, but if it wasn't before, then it's right around the death of George Floyd. And so I was still writing very much during that time and seeing everything that was going on. They didn't choose everybody. So to your credit, they didn't choose everyone. And we still have to ask ourselves, why us?
Why me?
I will say that it was strange because I don't necessarily have a big like audience of white people that talk a lot in my comment section.
Oh, lucky you.
I mean, it's so it just has never been this style. I had a lot of Black people. So people are always like, oh, and you have the white. No, I actually didn't. Now they are there, but I didn't have that kind of dialogue that happens in comment sections. I see it and it has happened, but it wasn't a lot of it. In some ways, this was harder because I had a lot of Black people that I felt really like, I don't want to, it's not responsible to, for, around something, you know, that I felt it was like, but this is us and you're following me. And that made it so much harder to like dig myself out of this and say, no, Black people, like, hold on, us, I'm talking to us. I don't know. I don't know if I'd be saying the same things now that I said then. And it was very personal to do it that way. The book, you know, I try not to say or state anything. I try not to make any value judgments. Of course, I do about Black people. I tell the story and I'm like, if you decide that that's what I mean, then you should ask yourself why you think that. But with white liberalism, I just go ahead and say it, because that has just been my experience in watching what's happening. I would want them to ask themselves, why like this?
Right.
That's not my work. Why like this? Why do you want to win in someone's comment section?
Right. Do you, what do you think if you now could be you then? Because you said you might not say things the same way. What do you think you would change?
Who am I? You know, who am I? I think more than most people, I really had a separation of self and persona. You know, no one knew anything about me. I would come on, I would do this stuff, and I would leave. And it wasn't, you know, any stories and any in-between, like, oh, I'm here, I'm there. So no one really got to know me. It was just that. And in some ways, that felt really dangerous because I never had to say what was going on behind the scenes, hence this book. You know, I eventually changed. It starts to Dear White People, then it gets to Dear Black People, and then it gets to Dear Me, us, you know? And so I did that while I was still active on social media, but it got slower and slower all the time. Because how much do I really need to say on social media as this person unless I'm going to stop it, write this book and say, now you know who I am, so we can talk. But how do you talk as a persona?
Right. I mean, the heading on your website is Honesty is Revolutionary. And I want to know more about why that's sort of the phrase that you picked for yourself.
I'm really exhausted by having conversations in public differently than I have them in private. Mm. That's exhausting. And I especially got frustrated to have them with other people who also maybe had persona. And like, we would go off to the side and be like, oh, isn't this ridiculous? Oh, they only like us for this reason. Oh, blah, 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 blah. And none of that was reaching the public sphere. Well, then we don't have the whole story. Mm. Because if I secretly am having all of these thoughts and feelings and I'm not presenting them, like, what do we do? Like, what do we do with that? It's very easy. It's very safe to just say, here's my ideology, my great big ideology that is unpracticed and I don't have to test it out with you. You don't have to see how it conflicts with my real life. You don't have to see if I'm really living this way. And we act as though we can have these ideologies that don't necessarily match our lives. Like, we go talk amongst friends, we're like, oh, white people are doing this thing. And then you go in this room and you don't say it. Right. And then you want them to correct something that you literally never said because you were having two separate conversations. Are you going to go ahead and say the real thing that you say amongst black people? Are you going to say this curated, prepackaged, kind of safe, wait, we can say a little more now, so I'll say it this way? Or, oh, now I'm the expert in the room because George Floyd, so I'll say it that way. Right. Or, oh, they respond. If you're having it like that, how do we think it's getting better? We haven't said anything that we would say over here. And when I'm saying to white people what I would say to black people with no differences, unless it's like intimate stuff, then I'll know. Mm-hmm. And so I was working on getting better at saying, this is what I'd say to my friends. So I'm going to say it to you so you can have a real opportunity to see the whole picture and not just something you can pick and choose from.
Has that changed how the conversations have gone for you? And if so, in what sort of ways?
Yeah, they've gotten better. I think that are we underestimating how much honesty we can bring to the table? Yeah, but it's vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And so if you are a person who feels ready to have that conversation, have it with whoever you want to have it with and say, oh, this is what's going on with me. This is how I feel about the work that I do. This is how I feel about white people who talk to me like that. I just go ahead and have it. Jealous Black helped. But I don't know that that's for everybody. If you feel ready to have it, then have it. But that's not for everybody.
Well, right. Because I'm thinking about, I hate to use this phrase, and I wish there was another word to use, but like this idea of like cancel culture or call out culture, mm-hmm. where it's like, especially on social media, where let's say, you know, you're on your platform, you're talking to people on a broader scale on your social media, right. and someone does something in the comments that you don't like, a white person. And it's like, okay, well, we need to have mm-hmm. this conversation. So then you share it. And let's say you like black out their name. I'm thinking of like Rachel Cargill, for example. She does this a lot where she would like black out someone's name, but then show how these parts of the conversation that someone would message her were like problematic or gaslighting or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then the whole conversation shifts and becomes about like, she's canceling this white lady or like not all white people and like blah, blah, blah. So I hear what you're saying about honesty and like how when we're having certain conversations amongst black folks that we're not having with white people who are coming to us either as friends or family members mm-hmm. or on social media, like how to have, I don't know, like how to meet people where they are and to still have an honest conversation. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think that I had a lot of quiet white people who were following me because again, they're there. And so they got to see my dialogue with black people. Mm. And in this book, I don't steer away from talking to black people, even if white people are watching. I think that, you know, black people have big human lives
right.
that white people do not have to deal with.
Right.
There is no, here's how we're flawed. Here's how it looks when we're in this room with each other. Mm. Here's what this hierarchy looks like. Here's what my ego looks like, my pride, my desire for fame, my desire for attention. All of these human things. Instead, if you want to hear me just be the black expert of life that you come to and you rain all of this praise down on me that means nothing.
Nothing.
Absolutely nothing. To say thank you for this and that or whatever. thanks, but I don't know that I can really trust that because I do know that there are white, if you go to my comment sections, there's just not a lot going on. I would have somebody come in and say like, fuck you, Jill. But I was like, oh, okay. Right. Feel it. That's fine. But this like, we're doing this thing back and forth and I'm correcting the other white women. And so now I look like I have it right and more right than this other white woman. I'll tell her for you. Don't worry. Like, no, you're not going to tell anybody on my behalf. I don't need you to do that. I'm not going to dialogue with someone who doesn't mean it, you know? So there's a way that I can use it, but I don't want to. Right. Now, again, if someone can do that, let them do it. That just wasn't my way. If somebody wants to come into, as we see in the book, my DMs and really talk to me, then I will talk to you. But I know the difference between when this is another flex, something else to learn, something else to be like, and now check mark this ideology. I'll read this book and I'll cover my face on public transportation so you see that I'm reading this black book. I'm not interested in that. But people who are really like, even if it's why are you doing this fucked up thing and you mean it, then I'm going to talk to you. Mm-hmm. And it really goes better than with someone who is really just here for my script.
Right.
And to say that they're challenging themselves by following me because I'm edgy as opposed to this other person.
Right. Right. I just really like you. I just,
Tracy, like, I feel like I'm the one talking to the celebrity.
Me?
Here. Yeah. I'm not going to ask you here, but like, what the hell is going on? You're like a superstar in life. God. It has nothing to do. I mean, there's also this part I want to circle back around and say, how will we know when we're here to do the thing and we're just good at the thing, if we also keep relating it to, oh, wait, hold on, they chose us, so what does this mean?
Yeah.
I don't want to throw that thing away. If you can do what you're doing, you just can, because again, they don't choose everyone. But it's unfortunate that we would even have to do that. That it has to be like, did I get all of this because someone died?
Yeah.
That's, you know, like even that feels unfair. So.
That's totally unfair. I mean, I think that's the thing. I think for me, that is the piece of it that fucks with me the most.
Yeah.
Like, which sounds kind of selfish and kind of heartless a little bit. Like,
you're living your life.
But like,
so,
you know, like I remind myself constantly, like I was doing this work before and I was having authors of color and black authors and queer authors. And like, the show has not changed.
Yeah.
You know? And so like, I try to remind myself that, but there is of course this question of like, why me? Like, you know, and whatever. That's also a little bit of my own personal crazy talking too, like my own anxieties and my own, you know, I was a ballet dancer and a gymnast when I was little. So like I have like all those crazy.
You should have led with that.
Yeah, like all that like weird, crazy perfectionist lifestyle choices. And I'm a Leo. So like, there's just like a lot going on.
And they won't see my faces. So I have to remember to be like, wow.
You have to you have to make it audible how crazy you think that I am. Exactly.
I'm very facial expression. So okay, I got it. Let's do it.
But yeah, it's just, I don't know, maybe eventually when people decide to get vaccinated and like take care of one another and we have a better world and things are a little bit less horrible and crazy, I'll be able to reflect on this time and like write a book about it like you did. But I'm like so far from that. Also, I hate writing, so I'm never going to write a book about that. But you know what I'm saying? But I do have a question kind of in there around, like you said, you sort of started this book right around the time of last summer. When you were because I know you were probably thinking about it before you ever put pen to paper or started typing or however you wrote it. How did last summer change how you approached this book, or did it?
Mm-hmm. It didn't change that much. I think that this is a group. The group that responded to George Floyd in this way that we're now making fun of, but loved last year. I was already skeptical, so I wasn't newly skeptical.
Got it.
You know, I think if you are waiting for individuals to die before you are interested, then that's already a place to exist in. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that I'm not invested in people growing and getting better, whatever. I very much believe in that. Speaking of cancel culture, I very much believe in that.
Same, same.
But not like this. You know, this not like this. Not as this is what it takes for me to dot, dot, dot. Whoever that person, whoever we're talking about, if that's what it took, then I'm already a little bit like, why? Mm. Why would that have to happen? And then what made this different than any of the other like big media mm-hmm. murder. Like what did it for you? Is it because you were inside?
Right.
Did you have the time? You know, because obviously we had seen this
of course.
Before. So why? Who knows? But it wasn't new information necessarily. It's something that obviously has been slowly burning right. for a while.
Right. This is sort of a flip on the same question, which is, how was it for you to publicly call yourself out in so many ways throughout the book? You do it. I mean, like the last essay is essentially you talking to yourself about yourself. And throughout the book, we see you kind of talking about who you were at a certain point of your life and now who you are now, kind of breaking that down as like most mm-hmm. memoir-y type things are, at least the good ones. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, like, were you nervous to call yourself out? Were you excited to do it? Was there something freeing about it? Did it feel icky? Like, how did you navigate that part of it?
It took until this week for me not to genuinely took until this week to not be terrified.
Mm.
And that feels important to say. Because if I go around and act like, yeah, I just wrote this, you know, tell-all, basically, and I was fine with it, that's not true. It was scary. And I think I needed to hear from other people to be like, these are these, like, side conversations, right? But I can do it here? Mm. Okay, cool. And, you know, that was the test. Can I have the side conversation, even the one that I have with myself,
right,
in public? Using myself as, like, creatively, that's just something I've always done. So then there's just the writer part, my show moms as managers. Like, I always like to play around with who we really are and make it mm-hmm. art. That's just a style thing. So it was always going to be something like this. But yeah, it was scary because I think you can write the book where you just say, like, you're the problem. And let me tell you why. And here's all the degrees I have that allow me to tell you why. And here's all the research I did that. Or I could say, here are my stories, which was already scary enough because mm-hmm. people these days are like, where are your solutions? Right. I don't have solutions. I have questions.
Right.
Some people are ready for solutions. We're ready for like really direct solutions. But these kinds of questions right. about like, no, we're not there. We're not even being honest yet. How are right. we going to answer that? We're not even stating.
A lot of the times we don't even have good questions yet.
We don't have
like
good
we
questions.
Have like bad questions, which I know a lot about.
No, you don't. I think, yeah, it was really, really scary. And then I had to think about other people because I can't do it in a vacuum. And while I will say that a lot of these conversations I'm having, there's like multiple and we, you know, put it into one person or something like that. It wasn't just me.
Right.
These are my mother's stories. These are my friend's stories. These are stranger stories. These are people that I've met. And so, yeah, it was really, really scary. But I think it was always going to be, hey, this is me. Because I didn't want to spend my time talking about someone else when I have a great archive right here
right.
that allows me to just go ahead and try my own honesty. And why would I tell somebody something to do and not, you know, try to exemplify it, you know? So even if the next book is like, now I'm going to tell you what to do, I'm going to refer back to this book where I was like, I tried it.
Right.
And that's, you know, and I won't do that because by then who knows if I'll even agree with the book.
Right.
But it just seemed worthy because I know that people might be a little scared to talk in public right now. So I wanted to also show what happens when someone calls themselves out before they are asked to or forced to. Mm. Or someone says, oh, I found out this thing. Now answer for it. How about we freestyle rap battle this? And I'm going to go ahead and say all the things I think it is. And then when the book comes out and you say, oh, wait, hold on, what about this? Then let's go ahead and do that.
Mm.
But I'm tired of cancel culture being like, you're getting canceled because you get caught.
Mm.
And then you admit to all the things. Or then you say, wait, hold on, I'm like this because of this.
Mm-hmm.
What if we flip it? Let's at least flip it and say, well, then I told you.
Right.
And no, it's not perfect.
Right. Right, like getting out ahead of the story, but for no story, just like
but for no story.
Just like out of the goodness of wanting
I
to be the right person.
I think this brings the story right. out almost. So
right.
you know, and good person, I don't know.
Well, like
who
yeah,
knows?
That was sort but of like, an air quotes good person. You know, like whatever.
Okay, I wouldn't
means.
Go that far either. But like not air quotes. But like yeah, but totally.
Do you? What was it that made you be less terrified? Because you said you were terrified until this week. Like, did you just, how did you come to that of like, I could do this?
Luckily, other people, you know, which always feels good when it gets to be the reminder that we're all still out here.
Yeah.
And in this together, because I didn't know who would like this thing or
right.
dislike it. And, you know, over the months, the panic sets and you're like, everyone will hate this book and hate me. And so, you know, I think it was like, wait, hold on. This is because, you know, sometimes you're too skeptical. And then you think no one. And that's not the case either. It's going to reach who it reaches. If it doesn't, you know, we have to believe that books are for everybody. This book is for anybody. But is it for everybody? Right. I don't know. Right. And with a debut book, you don't even get to choose me. You know, it's like, I've heard that this thing, so I'll try it. You know, and it's like, I don't know.
Right.
But, you know, and I'm still scared. It's me.
Right.
You know, it's about me. So I don't know if that'll ever go away. But what I will say is you probably want me to be scared. If, you know, like to read a book like this, I think people should want me to be scared of what they will think. I think it's balance, because it's a bold book. There's some bold talking. So it's only fair that I spent the last few months being like, oh no.
I definitely was like, as I was reading it, was like, I wonder how she's feeling knowing that people are reading this book. Because I read it, I think, in July, so a few months early. And I was thinking like, you know, it's not out yet, but I wonder what that feels like. And that's not something that I usually think about when I read a book early.
Yeah.
Like usually I'm just like, oh, I'm so lucky I got this book early. But I was on an airplane and I was like, I wonder what sort of like self-care Jill is up to these days. Like sending out those copies. Like I definitely thought about that, which I think is a testament to you like going there. Air quotes again. I don't know. That's sort of like a cheesy phrase. Like, she went there. You go there, girl. Yeah. Not really my
when
vibe.
You say it like that versus the original way.
Is there anything that is not in this book that you wish was in the book?
Yes. I think that doing it today, what are you going to do? Like, I can't go back. So this was always going to be the book.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that now I get to talk about saying, like, I wish I spent more time on saying where my happiness was as we go on. But the truth is by the time I was really finishing this book up, I didn't know myself, you know, so it had to be okay because it had to be the book of just where I was. Now I can say, oh, you should have spent some time saying, like, and once I let this thing go, this is what happened, and here's what I got instead. And it's also a really empowering time because I'm getting to hear from everybody, and I get to connect based on something that I really feel,
right,
as opposed to ideology or something that really happened to me. So when people say they're like, oh, you know, this is my thought process when I'm in these kinds of rooms or whatever. And so the payoff will be that when someone likes it, it's going to be like a real connection, you know? And that's what I'm really all about, is like that level of intensity for the connection. So if I write it and you like it, great.
Right.
Thank you. I appreciate you for reading. But if you like it, like, oh, what? How do you? Oh, wait. Cool. The payoff is that, you know, we get to be friends, whether we meet each other in the world or not. Like, I'm your friend now. I'm out here. I'm trying. I'm sure you're trying.
Right.
And so now it feels good. You know, it will always feel scary, but now I'm starting to be like, wait, I mean this stuff.
Right.
So let's go.
Right. Well, there's like a sense of, I put this on a piece of paper that has been published in a book. Like, so I like, there's some standing behind that as like a version of yourself. I want to talk about the title. How did you come up with Unfollow Me?
That, it used to be Sorry to Disappoint. When my editor and I came into each other's lives, it was that. And then she was like, so the title. And I knew that she would. I like everyone. I was like, me too. So we had this phone call. I was sitting right here. And we just were throwing these awful titles back and forth. And then for some reason, I remember that when I would conclude a speaking engagement, and they would be like, oh, tell them about your social media, which, you know, is always like, make sure they... And so I used to say, you can follow me or unfollow me at, you know, and I would say that. And so I just tried saying it out loud, or it can be unfollow me. And my editor's like, wait, what? And I was like, I used to say it. And she's like, wait, hold on. No, that's it.
That's
so
it.
That was the one. And it has history to it, because if you've ever seen me speak, follow me, unfollow me at, and now it's wherever products or services are sold. I added that part.
I'm going to steal Unfollow Me, Unfollow Me, because I really like that.
You really, Tracy, like, you can't do it.
I'm going to. And I'm going to be like, I come up with this all on my own. I've never heard of Jill Louise Busby. Thanks.
I have like 5 good ideas in this life, and that's one of them. And if you take it, then I have 4.
No, this will be your legacy. It'll be like founder of Follow Me, Unfollow
Me,
Inc.
Don't do that. Don't try to butter me up talking about it's my legacy. Because you want to steal it.
I want to steal it because whenever I go on other people's podcasts, they're like, where can people find you? And I'm like, you can follow me on social media at the Stacks. I like hate saying it.
Again, if you say it like that, I just feel like that's not.
Well, I know because that's how I say it when people ask me where they can follow me. But I feel like I would be more empowered to be like, you can follow me or unfollow me at, you know, like. You
some base.
Come in or come out. Like, I'm going to just be there, whatever you want to do. You know, I feel like it's
I almost like come in or come out, though. Like,
but
I
that's weird. Come in or come out at thestackspot.com.
Let's table this.
We'll jam a little bit offline.
We'll jam a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break. Then we're going to come right back. It's important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality, and that's why for almost 4 years now, I have been drinking AG1. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 is constantly searching for how to do things better. They're at 52 iterations of their formula and counting. Their team is always trying to find better ways to source, test, and find the best quality ingredients available. So many people have asked me if AG1 is actually the real deal. And trust me, there's a reason why I've been drinking it for so long. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword. It's a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, and rigorous testing. At each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because they totally obsess over product quality, the standards of manufacturing partners, and sustainable practices. Taking care of my health shouldn't be complicated, and AG1 simplifies this by covering my nutritional bases and setting myself up for success in just 60 seconds each morning. AG1 ingredients are heavily researched for efficacy and quality, and I love that every scoop also includes vitamin C and zinc to support my immune system, which is so important for me, especially with the germs that the mini stacks have running around and going to a cesspool called preschool. I've stayed partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high quality product, and I genuinely look forward to drinking it every single day. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 and K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/thestacks. That's drinkag1.com/thestacks. Check it out.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number smart beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
All right, everybody, we're back. So I want to talk about the actual process of writing the book. I want to know sort of how long it took you to write the book. I want to know also where you write, how many hours a day, how often. Do you have music? Do you have snacks or beverages? Are you having rituals? Are you lighting candles? Are you doing a dance? Like, what is the vibe for your writing life?
Well, what state are you in?
California.
Okay, so edibles are a big part of it. And then
wait, what state are you in? Washington?
Washington.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah, but I wasn't always. And so, you know, like, but really it's like I had a playlist that I eventually could use, and it, you know, took me some places. I needed some like good rap on there for when I was having some moments where I was trying to get empowered, and then I needed to tell everybody off. You know, yeah. I was writing, I was like, fuck you, and I was talking to myself. But, you know, so there was the playlist, but I had 6 months.
That's it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So when I was talking to Bloomsbury, who's just been awesome, and I liked them right away. So I maybe that's why I told them 6 months. I don't know what happened there. I was like, and I only need 6 months. I'd love for it to come out next year. And I'm just talking. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, Jill, please, why are you saying this? But I said it, and they were like, oh, okay, great. And so I had, you know, 6 months and met my deadline for that somehow, but mostly because my life was just getting ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And then the book almost became an escape from what else was happening. I was like, now this is easier. Hmm. And then it wasn't ridiculous, and then it got harder. So it shifted into it, but 6 months. So yeah, all this started last year. And so mine is a little more quick.
Yeah.
It's moving more quickly. So yeah, not long.
Okay. I'm circling back to snacks and beverages.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's like the only question I ever ask everyone. And it's the only question I actually care about. The rest of this is shit.
Tracy, I'm so sorry. I'm embarrassed almost because I feel that way too. And I'm just,
I'm hungry.
Nerves. But like, you know, I understand. I am too. I know that it's like people don't do it anymore, but I love coffee,
okay. You
know, and I know everybody's like, oh, I don't drink coffee anymore. And then I'm like, great. So you don't understand. But like lots and lots of coffee.
And how do you take your coffee?
Black.
Okay. Jill
is
black.
And not just to be. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Not just to be like, oh, I take it black. Jill is black. But like I take it black out of convenience at this point.
Got it.
But black coffee, and like I'm big on the apples.
Oh.
People who know me know I'm like always with an apple.
This is very Washington of you.
Very Washington of me. You know, like apples and pecans all the time.
Oh.
But you know, I'm vegan.
Okay.
And you know, like I wouldn't say an annoying one, but I think more annoying than most in one way.
I think everyone else's eating habits annoy me personally, like regardless of what you do and don't eat. I have such strong feelings about food in certain ways. And so I just am like, oh, like I am annoyed that an apple is considered a snack to you because that is considered like hard work for me.
Well, okay, that's fine because I'm lying too. I don't think we're annoying. I am from the South, so I cook a lot and I have some indulgent things. But you know, when I'm writing,
yeah,
I'm like, I'm chopping it up. You know what I mean? So I need like crunch this, boom, boom. Like I can't get into it because then I want to savor the food. Yeah. I want to take my time with it. I want it to be romantic.
Yeah.
So I can't do all of that
while I'm
writing. Do you know what I mean?
What you're saying tracks with the majority of people that I have on the podcast. Usually, okay. I ask this question all the time because I love snacks. And I would say 80% of the time, the answer is some form of disappointing to me because it's like, I don't snack or I like eat fruits and vegetables as a snack. And like the only person who really like impressed me, wowed me, brought me to the table. And I was like, I'm with you was Tressie McMillan Cottom. She has a crunchy, a salty, a sweet. She has like a whole array. She has multiple beverages. Like she was speaking to my heart. Tracy. Everyone else. You know, someone who blurbed your book, Jason Reynolds, vegetables or something horrible. I was like, Jason, I want to die. This conversation has to end.
I don't even know. And I don't mean to talk about Jason like that, but I'm going to have to text him and see if that's even true.
If he eats snacks. No, he does. But when we recorded in person, he ate a donut. And then I found out later that he is healthy. And I was like, well, I've met you once and you had a donut.
How do you find out later that he's healthy?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Okay. No, we're gonna talk. Jason and I have a dynamic where this is good for me.
Okay.
You know, because like we do this thing. So this is wonderful information. Great. Thank you.
And he listens, so he'll probably tweet or DM me and be like,
Jason,
how come one time someone else said they like something healthy and he was like, see, I'm not the only person who eats healthy things.
Okay.
And I was like,
see how he is.
I see.
He made fun of me for being healthy.
Oh.
When we first met, this is our first conversation with him. I know Jill doesn't eat. And it just went from there. And he was right. But like, no, Jason, wherever you are right now, like.
We're coming for you. The snack police are coming.
This is it.
You can follow me or unfollow me at the snack police.
Call in, call out at. Come in, come out at.
I'm working on my abolitionist lifestyle, but snack policing? Never. Do not abolish the snack police.
Unwilling.
Yeah, unwilling.
Give it up. Yeah. I mean, everybody has to draw the line.
It's true. This is what I'm passionate about. Apparently books, but really in my heart, it's snacks.
It's the snacks.
And I kick myself every day that I didn't do a snack podcast because I was like, the amount of books I get sent, imagine if that was all snacks.
All snacks.
Dunkaroos, goldfish. I'd just be so happy.
Dunkaroos. Oh, wow. I didn't even know they still made those.
Someone I follow on social media got some like gift pack from them. And I was
like, that could have been you.
It should have been
me.
I know.
You get these fucking books.
I got your book.
This fucking shit. This bullshit.
No, I'm glad I got
it. Yeah. Okay.
I wish your book came with Dunkaroos, though, is all.
It should.
That should have been your publicity plan.
That wasn't in my budget. I don't know if that would have to come from me. I don't know what's going on, but I'll see. I'll email somebody and just see what's going on.
Check in with Rosie or whatever. She'll let us know.
Yeah.
Rosie knows what's up.
We got questions coming from everywhere now. Yeah. This is great.
This is like a real non sequitur, totally, but kind of related. How do you preserve and or tap into your creativity?
Whoa. Oh, Tracy with the big questions. Okay. I feel like Quentin.
Sorry.
I think usually it has to be from a place where, in this, of course, it's not for everybody, but I have to almost get a little tired of myself and need to create something new, because the way that I am, I'll like think about something for a long time. Like, I want to do this thing around. I'm like, why are you still talking about that? Do something else. And then I can get it, because right now I can't write. And you asked this earlier too. I didn't answer. I'm not writing at all right now. And I'm going to just have to be honest about that. I want to do something visual next, and then I'll want to do this. But usually I have to be like, okay, and I'm done before I can pick up something again. So usually when I'm just like a little bit exhausted, and I have a day job, you know, so, and that's really helped me with like, I only do this because I want to do it.
Right.
You know, and that, if somebody else is making major coin off of it, good for you.
Right.
But for me to be happy, it has to be like, all right, that part is taken care of. And now I'm like free to think of what I really want to do.
Would you ever want to not have one?
No.
Okay.
And if my boss is listening, I like my job a lot. I get to help people and talk to people. And, you know, it's something I'm just as proud of as anything else that I'm doing. Like, the book is great and it comes with all this fun stuff. And I get to talk to you, which is like awesome because you're a superstar. But like, you know, this part is great. But I think, you know, like, I'm good at my job, my like regular job. And so this will always be when I feel inspired to do it. And I want to make sure of that.
That's sort of freeing.
For me, it is.
It sounds
for me,
like
it is. Yeah. And then there are people who are like, I can't show up to that place and do that. Like, I want to do this fully and whatever. And okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's all so individual, especially when it comes, at least my experience, like being around creative people for my whole entire life is like everyone has different ins and outs, which is what's so interesting when you think about like the product, right? Like, there's all these books in the world, and I get to talk to authors and people who have written books, and it's like the way that they get in and out of the creativity is just so incredibly varied, which is very cool. What's a word you could never spell correctly on the first try?
It used to be restaurant when I was growing up. So then
same word as Jason Reynolds and Quentin Tarantino. Big day for you.
I bet we're like all Sages. I know, Jason. It used to be that one. Then my mom made me practice every day. Spell restaurant, spell restaurant, spell restaurant. It's great. But there's one now and I just never, ever know. But I'm going to be honest. There are a lot of these. Because then I, for some reason, set up like walls to learning it.
Yes.
You know, I'm just 1,000%. Well, like, why? Like, learn it right now and just be done. But there are like at least 11 that are just sitting there and I should just work on them. But I'm going to, because I can't think of it, I'll have to go with the Jason answer, which he'll love. Restaurant.
Restaurant. But you can spell that now.
Where he eats donuts.
Yeah. The donut restaurant specifically.
Yeah. The donut restaurant.
It's really hard to spell donut. Donut. One of the only words I can spell. One of the only words I care about.
Okay. I'm seeing a pattern here. I'm starting to learn what's going on.
Yes, you see. Mm-hmm. I know this is sort of a fucked up question to ask someone who has not even published their book yet, but do you have, and you can tell me to fuck off and leave you alone, but do you know what comes next for you?
Fuck off and leave. Okay. No, I just want to say.
Okay.
Yeah. Do I know? No.
No. Okay.
But I think that I want to be having a lot of conversations around this book. I want probably another season of Moms as Managers. I am feeling like I'm about to shift into writing again. Okay. I can feel it getting there. So then it's time to see about that next book also and what that looks like for me, because when people read now, they're like, seems like you left it like there's mm-hmm. something else coming.
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got to be something else coming because we got to talk about the next stage.
Right. And there will be, yeah. even if you don't have it yet. But when you sort of feel these like waves coming on of like the shift for you, do you know, or did you know that there would be potentially another book for you one day? Or when you finish a thing, can you not, and like, is there a world in which you finish the book and there never again is another book for you? Or are you one of those people that's like, eventually when I write my second book, and then you just wait for that wave to come?
Yeah. I mean, I've been saying my second book. So okay. that's the, you know, that's where the truth is for me. This one, it was hard because I felt like I was undoing something mm. to get to a start.
Right.
You right. know what I mean? So this was like a kind of a hard one because it was transitioning a lot of different things at once, circumstantially. So I almost had to get this far into it to just be like, right, book two, because this felt like all of my last 4 years, you know, sort of being unearthed and coming up. And I didn't have the space to think about what happened after this because I couldn't even envision what happened after this. And now I'm starting to get more like, okay, we're getting closer. It might just be normal. Like,
right.
even if people hate your book and they don't like you and they're like, fuck you, Jill, that's still normal because this is life. Right. So now I can like clear some space and be like, but what do you want to do? And, you know, it's about that time.
Oh, I'm excited. I can't wait. This is one of the problems with getting to read books early is I'm like, okay, well, I read this book 3 months ago. So like, what's next? Like,
what's next for you?
I'm waiting.
You are really late.
You have 3 months to turn in your next book to keep on track because I'm three months ahead of everybody.
If I say, you know, I would say and be like, you're right, Tracy, 3 months.
You called Bloomsbury. You're like, I have a book for you in 6 days.
Like, one.
Thank you. Signed up.
They're like, we don't even want that.
They're like, call us for the third one. Okay. But for people who do read your book and who love it, are there books you might recommend to them that are in conversation with your work that you think, you know, not necessarily the same kind of book, but like something that you're like, oh, if you like this, you'll like that.
You know, I'm always going to say anybody from my Rhode Island Writers Colony family. So Candace and Christine and Jason and Mateo, and then all of the forthcoming books as well that you will get to know about. I think you should just probably Google Rhode Island Writers Colony. And
as you're saying everyone's names, I'm like, you're the last one for me to have on the podcast because I haven't had Candace on, but we did her book, had Mateo, uh-huh. had Christine, had Jason, now you. Very exciting.
We're a fun group. So.
I know. I want to come hang. Wait, look, is that the same retreat at which?
No.
Oh, I was going to say the flowers.
You know, people are asking this and I'm like, this is the retreat that makes this one necessary.
Got it.
Right.
Got it.
And, you know, of course, I'm a little concerned. I'm like, I hope that that's very clear. But there are no white overseers involved
right.
here.
And no flowers either. The flowers were really important to me. I was very interested in who got what flowers by the end of that essay. I was like, but what did you get? Like, I need to know.
What did you get? Yes. And of course, I'm a huge fan of Yersa Daily Ward. And so The Terrible is something that I read before I started this and was such an honest book. And I know her next one is coming, but that one for me is really, really special. Yeah, I think anytime someone is just being honest, I love Chloe Caldwell. So I also read a lot of her. Her book is coming and we'll be in conversation at Karis Book soon. But other than that, like, I don't know. I kind of had to shut it out for a while because I'm one of those people I do observe. And then I'm like, wait, is this coming from you?
Right.
So I kind of have been tuned out. But yeah, I feel good about that list.
And for people who are getting ready to pick up the book, they love you. They've listened to you for this last hour. What do you hope that those people will keep in mind as they read?
I'm sorry, and I'm reading Cultish by Amanda Montell.
Oh, I just finished that.
You just finished it.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Did you read her first book? Did you read Words Left?
Yes.
Loved Words. I really liked both, but I was really impressed by her. Not to sound patronizing or horrible.
No,
but like I was really impressed.
It's an important book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had such a fun time reading that book and I learned a lot and she's good. Yeah, she's good for that.
And she made me feel better about myself because I had a lot of like insecurities around the way that I talk. because I now talk for work and people, I ask people, I encourage people to leave a review. Sometimes when I read them, I have feelings also. And she made me feel better about saying like a lot and talking like a quote unquote Valley girl. I mean, whatever.
Oh my God. I mean, at this point, what does that even mean?
I know. I'm from California. Okay. Leave me alone. This is how we talk.
Look, hey, I am from California, but grew up in Alabama, and this is how I talk. People are like, Jill, where are you from?
Oh, right. I forgot to tell you, I'm from Oakland. There was so much in your book about like your grandparents and all of that. I was like, oh, I'm very familiar with this whole thing. Anyways, I completely forgot that part.
Good to know, Tracy. Sorry, I'm now like totally blanking on
the question. Was what do you hope folks who pick up this book will keep in mind? Unfollow me, your book.
That we don't have to agree. I think the biggest thing is saying that it's an exercise of honesty, but you don't have to agree with my honesty. And I don't have to agree with yours. It is here to say, what if we tried it like this instead? And if it's for you, then go with it. And if it's for not, I understand that. I am not the person that needs everybody to love this book. Do I have feelings when people don't love the book? Of course I do. But when I settle down into myself, I'm like, wait, this review makes sense, or this feeling makes sense, or you don't have this experience, and that makes sense to me.
Right.
So I hope people go in saying like, yeah, I write, I have, you know, a voice that is very specific in terms of like, I like to just go ahead and say the thing, but that, I mean, again, I won't agree with myself about all of it soon. And this is the point. We should keep like disagreeing with ourselves and finding out who we are and what we think and being honest with each other. That's the point of the book is
right.
Talking about the great in-between when we're right and when we're honest. So, yeah, I would say that. Like,
I just find so much of what you say to be so empowering. I just, like, because I don't know, I'm always feeling like I want people to agree with me because I don't want to be wrong or, like, you know, like, and I think that there's so much in that of, like, if you're coming to it in good faith, from a place of honesty, that not only do we not have to agree, but that we, our future selves, may not agree with our past selves.
Right.
And like that reminder is the piece for me that I'm like, of course, of course.
Right.
So why would I think that everyone has to agree with me or that is important in the moment, you know?
Right.
Because I feel like feelings make it hard.
Feelings make it hard. People have them. We do it. It's just the reminder, like, how long do you want to sit in that? And then what does that really mean that someone disagreed with you? And then you'll miss things. Like, I read a review that had me upset like 26 hours, right? And I was so upset that I missed the parts that said, well, actually this thing and this. And I agreed with the disagreement. You know, I was like, actually, okay. All right, fine.
Right.
But like, when you're in your feeling, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You know, it's hard, but we got to try it and we got to figure something else out because or else we're all going to be too scared of the nuance. And then there's just not a lot we can do from that place because it's going to be more important to be right than to be real. And I don't know how to move from there.
Right. It's true. It's like there are no waves of creativity coming from that place because it's such a stopped location. And also, you know, for me, I'm so obsessed with criticism. Like I love to critique things. Like I'll see a play that I think is the greatest thing in the world and literally be like, this was bad and this was bad. and I enjoy that. Like to me, that is the enjoyable part of consumption when it comes to art.
I understand.
And so it's hard, but it's hard to remember when you're the person being critiqued that like there is a joy and a love that comes from the time that someone takes to criticize, you know? And like, if it's not just mean-spirited, again, like in good faith, you know, if someone's like someone has written a very horrible review about my podcast, which you can all go read on Apple Podcasts when you review the show yourself. And it was mean and like rude.
I like that.
And I was
that,
like,
by the way.
Thank you. It was mean and rude. And I was like, this is fucked up. But then there have been some where I'm like, you're right. I do say like a lot. I wish I didn't, but call Amanda Montel because she'll tell you it's fine.
Amanda will tell you. It's, you know, people say it's about impact and not intent. And I'm not quite settled on that yet. I think both are important. You know, I feel like getting someone's intent and be like, what's going on? You know, like I'm still curious about it. And it doesn't mean that it's greater than the impact. I'm still curious about intent. I want to know the whys. And when someone is like, even if they come on and say all this, I'm like, what's going on?
Right.
Why like this? You know,
right.
Because you can come here and critique me and you could be right, whatever that means. But why like this? And usually there is an answer.
Right. And that's an interesting idea. I think intent is super important, but I also definitely think that impact, at least for me, I feel like impact is more important because I think for a lot of people, they don't understand their impact. you know, like historically impact.
Yeah, right. But we usually say that impact is important when we're not the ones who are
of course.
The impact.
Yeah, no, 1,000%.
Like impact is the most important thing because we're on the
right.
receiving
end. Right, because we're the victim side. Or
right,
whatever,
but
not
when
to
it's
victimize.
You.
Right, of course.
We all care about our intent so
right.
much. We're like, wait, let me tell you why I did. Even if we're wrong, we're like, hey, I'm sorry, I was wrong, whatever.
Right.
Let me tell you why this happened this
right.
day. We love our intent.
Right.
When it's someone else and we're on the receiving end, all of a sudden it's like, sorry, impact yeah. is the only thing that matters.
No, I agree. I think that there's a much more like nuanced balance between yeah. intent and impact. But I think about this a lot because I think about the ways that we can't see our impact
yeah.
in the world. And I think that's where that maxim comes from is like,
yeah.
you can't see that your intent, you know, like if I intended to cut down my tree or whatever, I can't see the impact that that's going to have in 20 years on global warming or whatever. You know, this is a mm-hmm. horrible example. But so I understand like the idea yeah. of that. But I also hear what you're saying, which is like we can only feel what we feel. So when we're the person being hurtful, it's about intent. Mm-hmm. And we're the person being harmed, it's about impact. Because
right.
that's like, it's from an us-centered place.
Right.
But like
and
that there
both.
Is a balance in between.
Yeah.
Like there's something in between those two places where like the whatever quote-unquote truth, which also, you know, maybe doesn't exist.
Whatever.
But like there's like a reality in between yeah. impact and intent that's like for an outside observer.
Absolutely. And that really scares because, you know, we get to have all the conversations. Like we get to have the one about impact. We get to have the one about intent. We get to have the one about gray. We act right. like we can't have them. Like
right.
someone's going to take them from us.
Like we have to agree. It's impact over intent or intent
yeah.
over impact.
Let's talk about all of those things.
Right.
And then you tell me why, you know, so we're not giving anything up. I think I'm with you. It's about the balance of saying we tend to go to the extreme because now we've been harmed and we're like, no, you have no idea how this feels. I see you not caring
yeah.
about impact, intent, whatever.
Right.
Or I can see that this intent is kind of fucked up.
Right.
And even if you're not impacting me in the way you think,
right.
I'm questioning, you know, it's all of it, but we've got to bring it back in because we don't have to actually settle on the right or wrong. And I have information for people. In 2 years, we're throwing everything we're saying is right away for the next thing.
Yep.
So as you talk about people like this, keep in mind where we were 5 years ago,
mm-hmm.
keep in mind where we were 10 years, what you were saying, what mm-hmm. other people were saying, what your mm-hmm. friends were saying. This stuff is, it's changing all the time. So when you are talking, maybe
right.
we just remember like, I don't even know if we're going to be saying this word in this many
right.
years or not, or I wasn't bringing this group into the conversation
right.
at this point. Now I know to do that. If it's happening to us, it's happening to other people. And, you know, we're balance. I really like the word balance. I'm
yeah.
all for balance.
It's a good word. It is a great, it's a great ideal. It is so fucking hard in practice. Oh my
it's
God.
So hard.
Like imagine
it's
the hardest thing in the world. Balance might be one of them. Like in all aspects of life too, right? Like just
it's
everything.
That's true. It really is.
It's not to just devastate everyone with the most impossible aspirational word ever, but today's show is brought to you by the letter B and the word balance. This is my last question for you. If you could
sure.
have one person dead or alive read Unfollow Me, who would you want it to be?
Ralph Ellison.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, I read Invisible Man, strangely, for the first time last year. My mom had wanted me to read forever, had dedicated the book to me when I was like four, you know, just all
yeah.
of the things. But last year was the year, and I appreciated it so much for, you know, we forget how many of these things we just cycle through. You know, it's like it was written yesterday, and it was great perspective to be like, we just cycle, and we cycle, and we cycle, and we try to get these things better with each cycle, and some things feel worse with each cycle.
Right.
But, like, it felt so close. And it also, you know, Ralph speaks in the extremes of, like, this is what this feels like. Any, it feels like sci-fi almost. And sometimes it is and sometimes it's not. This is an overwhelming time to live in. So we better work on some balance. And that's
yeah.
not a warning, but like you deserve balance.
Yeah.
You know, you saw your life change. We had to bring out all of this. And also self-care came quickly behind it.
Right.
Let's ask why we were all of a sudden like, wait,
right.
hold on. There's a reason. That's all.
Yeah. Ugh. Jill, you're so great. I'm so glad that we got to talk today. Thank you for writing your book. Everyone at home, when you're listening to this, the book is out in the world. You can get it wherever you get your books. There are links for you in the show notes. It's called Unfollow Me, Essays on Complicity by Jill Louise Busby, today's guest. Jill, thank you so much.
Tracy, thank you. I'm going to check this off my bucket list. I see everybody else. I'm like, look at Tracy interviewing this person. I'm like, when is it going to be me? And now it's me.
You wrote a book and here you are. Manifest that shit.
Look.
Yay. Thank you so much. Everyone else, we will see you in the stacks. Thank you all so much for listening, and thank you to Jill for being my guest. I'd also like to thank Rosie Mahorder for coordinating this interview. The Stacks Book Club pick for September is Blood in the Water by Heather Ann Thompson. We will discuss the book on Wednesday, September 29th with Derica Purnell. If you love the show, please head to patreon.com/thestacks to join the Stacks Pack. Make sure you're subscribed to this podcast wherever you're listening to your podcasts. And if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, can you take one moment to leave us a rating and a review? For more from The Stacks, follow us on social media at The Stacks Pod on Instagram and at The Stacks Pod _ on Twitter, and check out our website, thestackspodcast.com. Our editor is Christian Duenas. Our graphic designer is Robin McCrite, and our theme music is from Tegeorgis. The Stacks is created and produced by